Welcome to Pro Tips for the Pros, brought to you by Floor & Decor Bailey's Crossroads. In this series, we'll explore essential advice for professional contractors to deliver outstanding renovation results. Let's dive in. Clear communication is key to a successful renovation. Keep the customer informed at every stage of the project, addressing any concerns or questions promptly to maintain trust and satisfaction. Thank you for joining us for this pro tip on planning thorough renovations. Stay tuned for more expert advice brought to you by Floor & Decor Bailey's Crossroads.
A lot of people tolerate ordinary. Ordinary bathrooms, kitchens, entryways. Well, not on your watch. If you're a pro, you've got a new partner in town. Floor & Decor. From tile to wood to stone, Floor & Decor has more styles and job lot quantities of Schluter, Mappe, Laetocrete, and other brands pros trust. Come see a whole new way to wow with Floor & Decor. Coming soon to Bailey's Crossroads.
Welcome to the Roma Press Podcast with Jun Solano and Andy Mattioli.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of the Roma Press Podcast. We hope you are doing very, very well. Very quickly, a thank you to our newest patron over at Patreon, Jack Jakub. Thank you, Jack, and of course to all of our other wonderful patrons who make all of this possible. If you would like to join, patreon.com/RomaPress. I also had to add this to my opening lines, Andy, about our YouTube channel, youtube.com/ISRomaPress, just like all of our other social media channels, the same thing, at ISRomaPress. Please subscribe. It greatly, greatly helps. And as I said in the previous episode, very soon in the coming weeks here, we will begin doing the episode in podcast form, or I'm sorry, in video form. Oof. So you will be able to enjoy our facial expressions when we begin to get into results mid-February, which is generally the Andy, the sweet spot for when the depression seems to set in for us. So people will be able to enjoy our beautiful faces. Also, if we bring on some guests, I am telling you, I am going to, even if I have to meet with him every single day to do it, I'm going to teach Marco Violi English just so we can have him on to give his origin story, because, I mean, you enjoy movies? That thing would be cinematic gold. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's things about that guy even I still don't know that I'm just dying to learn about. And I have to say again, I know that you saw, or one of the biggest developments in my life has been that guy unblocking me and finally feeling...
It happened, yeah.
Yeah, I feel a bit free from the tyranny where, you know, I don't have to talk in code to people or, you know, things I post on social media. I feel like I don't have to hide it anymore and fear that the man may show up on my front door.
Now he's going to be able to cut clips of you losing your shit on camera.
Yes, yes.
You know, so that will soon backfire.
Oh my gosh.
You will be going full Marco Violi.
Oh my gosh. Mancano questi. I soldi. My favorite of all time. Nothing will ever surpass that one. So again, youtube.com/ISRomaPress. Where do we even start? We can talk about the transfer market. We will revisit that, doing some grades to Roma. I'm debating how much the first three rounds of the season should really factor into it, because we can't erase what we have seen thus far. So I feel like that at least has to play some part. Before getting into that, though, tell me if I am being set up here. I feel like I am being made sort of like a patsy. I got invited to go on a television program that focuses on Aston Villa to discuss Zaniolo. One of the questions, Andy, is what is he like off the pitch? What is his personality? I feel like that question is setting me up as a way to open the floodgates to who knows. Although that also does feel like a way for me to express, as everyone knows, my affection for Frac 77. I just feel like that question,
which in normal terms is Zaniolo's mom's username on Instagram. That's for anybody that was wondering.
Sorry,
John is referring to. No, because here, you know, you start with this podcast. We're supposed to go global with this. We're building a YouTube channel. All of a sudden, you go out of your way to mention Marco Violi and Frac 77. Now, imagine you're a first-time listener and you try to grasp what the hell this man from Ohio is talking about. You have no idea. So what John is talking about is the Instagram profile of Zaniolo's mom, because she famously used her Instagram to basically defend her son publicly whenever some issue came up.
What she uses her Instagram for all the time. There's other reasons
See, you're a sick man, John. You got your fifth kid coming along, and here's you talking about...
Oh man! Well, you know, you say Ohio. The great thing is, not, since this is going to be on the video, it's because we got rid of the godforsaken flat in Asiago Vicenza. I am
there. We go. That's another mention of
when you free yourself from handcuffs. That is what it felt like.
Uh-huh.
So the great thing is, anytime I would do anything related to video, whether I was there or we were back in America, the great thing was you could never really tell because A, I use the same background, and B, if you did see the background and you used the weather as a reference point, the exact same. So this is my state of being, really. Like my homeostasis is living in crap weather and mentioning Frac 77 on the podcast. So
yes.
Anyway, I just felt like I was trying to be made into a patsy or something with that question, because I'm convinced they listened to the podcast and are just wanting me to. I mean, that would open
you
up.
You were
a
supposed
rabbit
to be
hole
the
of
Lee Harvey Oswald of the situation.
Well, I mean, if we really want to get into the levels as to how deep that would go, I mean, there are countless 20-something Italian women that I'm sure would be able to speak as to what this guy is like off the pitch. Let's move on. I just wanted to make sure that's seven minutes.
I'm not gonna get back.
Yeah, that. Apologies to everybody.
Exactly.
Apologies to everybody. It's a Thursday morning,
and
something happens during these international breaks where I don't know. I mean, this is the first, I think, month and a half where I'm not traveling between continents or countries, I don't know if I am going mad, or maybe this is just what a normal state of being feels like. I don't know. But anyway, it is nice, and I know many will not feel the same. After having had we are approaching almost one full week now of having to digest what happened against Milan, and I am still, like many of you, I still have indigestion from what took place. I am glad that there is an international break, because I have to say, while there has been the usual chatter from all of the usual suspects, nobody is going to be surprised as to which outlets are saying what and who is saying this, who is saying that. It hasn't been as chaotic as perhaps I expected, but it is a good time, in my opinion, to at least Okay, remind yourself that it's only the fourth match day. Again, nothing has been lost. Nothing was lost. You played like absolute shit in your first three matches. But relax. Take a breath. And that's what I have been using this time for. It is funny to see, though, during this week, and you can attest to this, Andy, like the depths to which all of the, you know, the usual suspects will go to find things to discuss, it is fairly annoying. As far as Roma is concerned, I would say really the only thing of consequence is what Thiago Pinto had to say during his press conference. You did a live stream touching upon some of those things on the YouTube. But I wanted to get into some of that here before we go into grading all of the transfer market of Roma, Milan, Juve, everybody. But from what he said, and first off, the candor that this guy showed was impressive. I was thoroughly impressed. Did you see the part where he said, I'm used to being rejected?
I'm a 30-year-old man. I've been divorced. No kids, no nothing. I'm used to getting people to say no to me. So
that's nothing new.
We've had trouble getting an attacker. Yeah, I mean that's
I'm 38, divorced.
I've been under pressure for the past 3 months. He said, "I'm tired. Yes. I've been under pressure for 3 months. You know, other sporting directors were on vacation in June, whereas in June I was actually planning stuff and working on the sales of players." So
yes, I mean it was the candor. I have to say, I was impressed. You compare that to, I hate bringing him up, but speaking of Villa. Ramon Monchi. I mean, the guy was embarrassed to even yawn, okay, in front of people. He would be self-conscious of yawning, this guy. Never mind spelling my name incorrectly for 2 years. But he showed a level of candor, Andy, that in this environment, it is one of those things when you are so up forward, up front, you would think sometimes it could come back to bite you. But me personally, I love this. I mean, first off, you could tell that, you know, we're so used to 75-year-old Italian guys being like being the senior executives of clubs in this country. To see that guy come here, this millennial, being like, listen, man, I'm divorced. I've lost my girl. I'm stressed out. I'm losing my hair. I'm getting fat. What do you want from me? Okay, I tried. I mean, all I could do was applaud the guy. And I think I mentioned this earlier, months, maybe even years ago. The guy does take on a lot of stress. And again, no body shaming here whatsoever. When you see his... his WhatsApp photos of he has two mobiles, a Portuguese one and an Italian one. He removed the Portuguese one. I'm convinced he must have heard the episode where I initially mentioned it, where he's with his family from at least 3 to 4 years ago. And then he has his Italian one, has a photo of him now. The difference between the guy, great hair, he put on maybe a stone or two. I feel bad for the guy. I mean, you can tell, man, the environment, this place is not for the meek of heart. It is not for, you know, you really have to have the fortitude to come here.
Of course. I mean, Paolo Fonseca, when he came here, he looked like Pierce Brosnan in Goldeneye. And when he left... when he left, you know, he looked like somebody you'd find in the Tenderloin district of San Francisco. So That was, and now he's back. He's back in Ligue 1, and he's having a great time, and he looks great. So
he looks fantastic.
You know, the only person that I think got worse by leaving Roma is Walter Sabatini, who looked like something you'd find in the movie The Mummy. and you know, it's not a knock on his health status, which I hope is fine, but the guy is not looking good. Thiago Pinto, yes. I mean, Thiago Pinto is someone who has been under the microscope for his entire time since he joined. I mean, remember, he comes in the winter of when Edin Dzeko is basically on his way out of Roma. Edin Dzeko is sitting in a car outside of the stadium of Bentegodi, ready to go to Juve, with an agreement in place with Juve for a swap involving Arek Milik. The Friedkins shut down the deal, and Pinto is basically brought in to mediate between Dzeko and Paolo Fonseca, with also the knowledge that Paolo Fonseca will not be renewing his stay. So from the first minute that he got here, he has not had a single free moment of, you know, the media or the fans like treating him like a normal human being. Like, people don't even know what he does, and they'll still find a way to tie him to something negative. You know, anything happens that is wrong or does not sit right with people, it's Pinto's doing, which I find very funny. I think it's because people are puzzled by this term general manager instead of the more traditional sporting director one. But I agree, you know, when he sat down at this press conference, I was surprised by how also, you know, he was having a laugh at himself. He was very open about it. You know, he admitted to having been engaged in different negotiations for different strikers over the summer, and exactly getting rejected left and right. He was also very honest about the fact that he is not perfect, but also about the fact that people need more balance and judgment, which is always what I'm asking of people, either on here or on their live stream, is to at least, you know, if you have a specific opinion, great, but at least I'm not saying try to revert to the opposite, but try to also see the gray area, you know. And with Pinto, he said very open about it, like, when I signed the Sardar Azmoun, I had like 100 direct messages on Twitter calling me names, saying I stink. And he says, yeah, I probably do stink, but when I signed when I signed Lukaku, everybody started writing me that I'm the king of Rome and complimenting me, which is, it rings so true to what Roma supporters can do also on social media just alone. The opinion swings from one extreme to the other. There is no balance. So with Sardar Azmoun coming in, there was no patience to see, okay, is the market over? The people assumed that the transfer window was over, you know, and they were not even willing to wait 48 hours to see that maybe Roma have something up their sleeve. And less than 48 hours later, Roma are in talks for Lukaku. So Sardar Azmoun's signing wasn't even official by the time we were already in London talking to Chelsea for the arrivals of Lukaku. So I thought in his press conference, Pinto was much more relaxed than I imagined him to be, because at the end of the day, you go to a press conference, you're basically faced with the people that either kiss your ass 24 hours per day, or you know, throw shit at you constantly.
Right.
You know, like some of those reporters, just like with Mourinho, it's either they kiss ass, or every day, either on the radio or in the paper, they'll write and they'll talk about you like you're some kind of, you know, terrorist. And so to see him so composed, but also highly critical of what he, you know, of what his job this summer was, he said, I'm never satisfied with my work. So now I'm going to be able to rest a bit, but I'm not satisfied with what I did this summer. And I think, you know, in the end, that's, it's really all you can do, especially in a situation like being a sporting director, general manager at Roma, where you are operating under extreme conditions. You will never be happy. You will never be happy. You will never make the perfect signing. You will never have the perfect roster because you just don't have the means to do it.
Oh, 100%. And two, just touching upon quickly about, you know, being face to face with the media members that, that throw the crap against him. You know, it is easy to see. And this is just me. This is my opinion on the matter, because I have a very simple belief of this. If you write something, because with these outlets, there are many of them, and there are others that don't. I mean, some of the people I have the utmost respect for do not write at Corriere dello Sport, Gazzetta dello Sport. It's, you know, Filippo Biafora. I mean, he will not write something of anybody that he won't say to their face. You know, like the dynamic sometimes in that in those press conferences. It is interesting because you can see sort of the true face. I don't know how you would say it. Like you can see sort of like the underlying motivations of some of these journalists, reporters, you know. You can really tell sort of who is true and who is not. I have always been fascinated by the dynamics that take place in those rooms. It is interesting to be a part of and to see. And again, I mean, the guys that at some of the biggest outlets, even like the Sky Sport, they just, some of the things that get said, written about, you know, when they have a chance to confront somebody and they don't do it, it is rather comical to see happen. But that is something I could do an entire episode about that if we really wanted to, but nobody wants to hear that. So in what you just said about Thiago Pinto, let's shift then to the grades. And when discussing this, I think we at least have to slightly consider what is taking place in these first few matches. Obviously, you're not going to give an entire judgment or give a balance on the summer transfer window after just three matches, because again, it is such a small sample size. Nobody is going to make dramatic shifts in their opinion just based off a handful of matches. So that said, let's just quickly run down what Roma did this summer and give grades as to what we think how they performed in the transfer market. And again, the way I view a successful or not successful transfer market, Andy, is extremely simple. Did you improve your team and give yourself a better chance to achieve your objectives, whatever those objectives may be? I do not think it makes sense to go, you know, when you look at the total of Serie A and go, okay, well, who had the most names, who had the best names? If they don't improve your team's chances to achieve whatever the objectives may be, whether it be avoid relegation, finish top four, win the Scudetto, I think it's silly. Ultimately, it comes down to, are you in a better position after the transfer market to achieve what you set out to do in your objectives than you were prior to it? So that is the way, and correct me if I'm wrong, I assume that is probably too similar to how you view it. I just think going, you know, who had the most names, who had the best names, and that's who did the best. I think that is way far too elementary of a way to view it. So very quickly, here is what Roma did. And when you look at the income as far as outgoing operations compared to the incoming, it is interesting to see. So we have Romelu Lukaku, loan. Leandro Paredes, loan. Renato Sanchez, loan with option to buy. Evan Ndika, free on a permanent deal. Hussein Awar, free permanent deal. Rasmus Christensen, loan. Sardar Azmoun, loan. I do not think I am missing anybody, correct? I think that is all. So when you look at that, you heard a lot of loans. And then as far as the sales go, this is where I think they deserve a heap of credit. So Justin Kluivert, out. Matias Vinha, out. Shomuradov, out. Perez, he is out. Brian Reynolds, Gonzalo Villar, both out. And on top of that, they also sold Ibanez, Christian Volpato, Tahirovic, Nemanja Matic, Misori, Solbakken, and Darbo, right? I think that is all.
Darbo yeah. is on loan, yeah.
Darbo is on loan. So,
same with Solbakken.
It depends on how you view this. If we are going to view this strictly from a name for name, how did they do? I think that really misses the point. I think this is all about, are they in a better position to achieve objectives than they were prior to this window? I mean, undoubtedly, the answer is yes, yeah? I mean, if we just go from who left to who came in, I would find it incredibly difficult to say that Roma are worse off than they were prior to the window. The only aspect or the only difficulty I find in making this judgment is Nemanja Matic. Simply due to the huge role he played within the team, I think what you said in the previous episode about moving Paredes from that playmaker, that G-style role right in front of the defense, moving him to Mezzala is what absolutely unequivocally needs to happen. And you need to put Cristante there. But for me, though, tactically, and as far as quality goes, I mean, Matic is the only thing that really gives me some hesitation, I should say. So if I want to give my grade on the overall balance out of 10, I would probably give to it a 6.5, maybe a 7. And on top of that, too, that is not even mentioning the financial fair play restrictions. I mean, that above all, the fact you were able to get these guys. I mean, Andy, if we didn't put how they arrived at the club and the overall cost, okay, if you just put Lukaku, Paredes, Sanchez, Indica, Ewar, Christensen, Asmund, if you put those names down on paper and you didn't show the fee or the type of operation in which they arrived to the club, everyone would have snatched that out of your hand without even thinking for a moment, yeah? I mean, that's the way I view it.
You look at this... You look at this window, and it's exactly, it's a window of opportunity. Roma could only plan to a certain extent because you just said it. You look at Nemanja Matic's departure, which basically alters whatever you were supposed to do. Hey, maybe if Nemanja Matic didn't leave, maybe you wouldn't end up even getting Renato Sanchez because maybe a better opportunity would have come along. And I think Nemanja Matic's departure prompted Roma to resolve the situation quickly by acquiring Leandro Paredes and Renato Sanchez. You know, since you were already in negotiations with PSG, you thought, hey, I might as well utilize this and try for another player who has been excluded from Luis Enrique's project. And so let's see if we can get lucky. I think, you know, obviously... We made some gambles. Renato Sanchez, even there in his press conference, Thiago Pinto was very open about it. He said, hey, if it works out, feel free to compliment me. And if he doesn't work out for us, if it's he's always fault, injured, yes. then you'll blame me because I'm the one who brought him in because I love him as a player.
By the way, did you see what he said about Indica? He said, if you look at transfer market,
he's 25 million, 30 million. Yeah,
that was fantastic.
It was fantastic. It was because he was, again, basically saying, you know, because he was answering a question about Marcos Leonardo saying, you know, we We are also aiming to sign young players for the future, but this time around it did not happen. We are also then, so we basically counter that initiative with free signings of players whose value is much higher than the one we signed them for. So yeah, Jose Mouawar, Evandika, guys that could have easily on the market gone for 20 million, 25 million, signed for a free with Roma. I do think, for example, the Rasmus Christensen is a sort of very low impact signing. It gives me basically, you know, the kind of vibes that I would get from Jonathan Silva, meaning a guy you bring in, you know, just to be an extra body.
That is the worst. So, I mean, you want to talk about people who don't know what that means. If you're a new listener, Google his, speaking of transfer market, yes, go to his, his spell at Roma. What one appearance. Yeah.
I think it was two appearances. Yeah. One, I always mix him up with, against the Empoli.
Who's the, come on. The guy from, they got from, Real Sociedad, the central defender. Come on. Hector Moreno.
Oh yeah, Hector Moreno.
He was one appearance, right?
He was a bit more. He played, I think, two in Serie A and a few in Coppa Italia, or maybe two in Coppa Italia. But basically, he was gone after 5 months, even though he had signed on a long-term deal. So it didn't exactly work out. No, but you know, with Christensen, it's clear that he was a name that was included when, again, you were talking for Llorente. You thought, okay, we need depth in at the right back position, and so you got him. So that's, for me, that's one of the more unconvincing deals. And Renato Sanchez is just okay to have questions. But then, obviously, you look at the way Roma managed to sign Romelu Lukaku, and they sort of compensate for whatever uncertainty they showed initially, right? I think we can all agree Romelu Lukaku arrived very, very late, but he wouldn't have arrived at all if you tried to sign him earlier, because he was not a player that you could get for free. I mean, obviously for some small fee of 5 million on loan, because Chelsea were intent on letting him go only on a permanent deal. And Roma would not have been able to match those demands. So I think Romelu Lukaku's arrival changes the entire landscape of Roma's transfer window. I do think Leandro Paredes, even though he's a player that we're highly critical of, in that situation, for that fee of, what, 3 million, something like that, including add-ons.
Yeah, it will be 3 million. I mean, you can't beat that. You can't.
No, that's, you know, even for a player that may backfire on you, that's, you know, it's such a low fee in that situation that you're
he has a pulse. I mean, at that fee, you can't beat it.
He, you know, I don't, it's not a situation where you can lose a lot, you know? So, I do like that. I do like, Jose Mouawar. I do like, the signing of Ndika, even though he hasn't played. I do think he makes sense. It's just a matter of, and it's not because I saw people worrying, hey, maybe fitness levels are low. No, apparently his fitness levels are great. It's just that Mourinho has been very reluctant to introduce him to the starting lineup because he's afraid that, the defense will not be able to read him and vice versa. But I think that we can safely say that the defense hasn't been able to read each other at all in this first three games. So I don't think introducing Evandika may cause bigger problems than the one you've already had over these past three games. So I do agree. I think, you know, obviously this is not a perfect window. A lot of it was either reaction signing. So, for example, exactly the Leandro Paredes, Renato Sanchez, it all happens within like 48 hours of Nemanja Matic leaving. That's a reaction signing. Lukaku is an opportunity signing. He comes in very, very late in the window without any preseason training, without any, you know, this Roma were monitoring so many players for that position. They were close to Marko Arnautovic. So clearly it says that Roma did not have a clear idea. Maybe they were hoping for a big marquee signing, and in the end, it worked out with Romelu Lukaku. So timing-wise, maybe not an ideal signing, but as the player himself, I mean, this is, you know, top of the line given the circumstances. So for me, it's a 7. It's a 7 due to really very, very difficult summer. Also, the fact that you managed to offload only Roger Ibanez from a team that, you know, you have some players that you don't want to see the club get rid of. You know, you extended El Shaarawy, you extended Chris Smalling, you extended Brian Cristante. I think the general consensus is now people seem to be dissatisfied with these decisions after 3 games, because they're like, oh, Chris Smalling is demotivated and has stopped playing and he's old, and then Cristante is back to being crap and El Shaarawy is back to being slow. But in hindsight, these are all deals that we would have wanted Roma to make. You know, it's those renewals. We are begging for Chris Smalling's renewal. We are begging for El Shaarawy's renewal. I think everybody was basically desperate with, you know, and crying at the idea of losing, you know, El Shaarawy, who's basically the ideal bench player. And Roma were able to secure all 3 of them. So in hindsight, I think, you know, timing wise, there were certain things that should have done better. More attention should have been paid to those wing backs, because I think in the ideal world, Roma would have sold Spinazzola. I do think Spinazzola should have left the club, because this is not a guy that Roma will renew. This is not a guy whose contract Roma will extend, and I do believe he's going to leave as a free agent. So I think this was, if there was an exit that you should have you know, put more effort into, it should have been Leonardo Spinazzola, but obviously that's up for debate, and we'll see how he performs. These 3 games have not been good for him, but I guess time will tell. And otherwise, you know, it's just the same old game. Is how smart can you be? How can you outsmart UEFA whilst you know, whilst complying with the restrictions that were set upon you? So it's all a matter of being smart, of not spending money, and of trying to find, you know, functional, efficient solutions to your problems, whilst also adding depth, which is, you know, it's very, very difficult. I do believe this was perhaps the most difficult transfer window that Roma have had to deal with since Mourinho's arrival.
I don't think there is any doubt about that. And again, I think that is something you absolutely have to consider when you are judging the market of Roma. There's just no way to put that aside and not consider it. Now, when you take the market of Roma, you compare it to the rest of Serie A, where do you place it? Because again, each team is unique in their objectives and what they're aiming to do in a summer window. There is no club that has there's no unilateral objective between all 20 teams in Serie A. Everybody is trying to achieve something different, to reach a different goal in the summer. When you consider that, and you consider what Roma were trying to do and what they did ultimately achieve during the summer, where do you rank it among the best of Serie A? Because when I look at particularly some of the bigger clubs in Serie A, I would put Roma's up there among the best. However, when you talk about these first 3 matches, obviously it is difficult to give them a perfect grade or the best grade. I think, in my opinion, I thought Inter did very well, especially considering they were in a Champions League final some months ago, and to lose what 4 or 5 guys from that starting 11, I think they did incredibly well to replace those guys and to add even more. Thuram is a guy I really, really like, one of those forwards who probably not going to score loads and loads of goals, but I think he can do a lot of things that maybe do not appear in the score sheet. Milan, it's difficult to crap to throw mud on them after they just defeated Roma. I don't like making that many changes. However, what they did for to sell Tonali and then to bring in some of the names that they did in the midfield, especially, I think, was impressive. If they can continue with Giroud long term, but really I'm speaking only of the coming months of this season, I still find it difficult that this is the guy at his age. He can be the one to lead your attacking line. Napoli, you mentioned them a few times in previous episodes, Andy. They were really, it was curious to see what they were doing coming off of his Scudetto.
Embarrassing.
Yeah, rarely do I say this about managers, but I kind of feel bad for our good friend Rudy, simply because
I don't know what he was about expecting. A patsy. Yeah.
I mean, you want to talk about a patsy.
Not only did a patsy, this man leave Saudi Arabia. So he was in Saudi Arabia when there were no quality players. He was there when Cristiano Ronaldo came in. And the moment Cristiano Ronaldo came in, he left. And the moment that Saudi Arabia starts pouring money into football, he comes to a Napoli side where everybody is open about the fact. I mean, I don't know if you've seen it, but Napoli's lawyer, Grassani, was unbelievable.
Again, the fact we know about Napoli's lawyer exactly. And people, their social media guy.
I'm trying because I try to imagine, you know, we have listeners from all over the world. In the live stream, there are people that say they follow us from Trinidad, Tobago, India, you know, New Mexico. And I just try to imagine if I'm like a random listener from one of those places to hear about Napoli's lawyer. Well, yes, Napoli's lawyer, you know, in Italy, everybody becomes famous. So Napoli's lawyer, Grassani, even publicly admitted that Rudy Garcia was like the 10th option on Roma's list, on Napoli's list. They, after winning the Scudetto and losing Luciano Spalletti, they went through a whole list of names, and Garcia was just at the bottom. They settled for that. So Garcia comes into a team that just won the Scudetto, and these guys are not willing to even spend a dime on the transfer window. And now there's a big, you know, there's like a big situation because Aurelio De Laurentiis doesn't want to increase Kvara's salary and doesn't want to renew Victor Osimhen. These are guys that have been just nominated for the Ballon d'Or. So this guy doesn't want to. So Napoli is a very strange situation. I think Roma rank somewhere beneath Milan, who I think did the best. I think Milan, Atalanta, Inter, Roma. In terms of transfers, I think that's. And then Fiorentina, I believe, did well. Lazio, we'll see, because I do think that in the midfield, they tried their best to replace Milinkovic-Savic. That's a big that's a big absence, so we'll see how that goes. But I think Juve and Napoli did not do enough. And I, you know, knowing my luck, I'll probably be proven wrong and whatever. I don't care. But at this time around, on paper, I really do think that everybody in Serie A tried to do. Everybody in Serie A made a lot of money this year, but spent very little. Like, that's the consensus. Roma, Serie A are the top league in terms of, you know, of money, of income made from transfers. So they sold their players very well, and they sold a lot. A lot of important players left Serie A. The problem was that nobody was able to spend. So Milan are up there because what? Because they spent the 70 million or some 60, something like that, that they earned from Sandro Tonali's sale. Inter spent some money, not as much as everybody expected them to. The fact that, you know, the Onana's money, part of it, only part of it, went toward the signing of Benjamin Pavard from Bayern on near the final days of the transfer window. That was surprising because everybody expected them to splash a lot of money on the striker, and then in the end Marko Arnautović came in for 10 million. But everybody did, I think, the best they could realistically, except for exactly Napoli, which for me, it's mind-boggling that these are the reigning champions. And when you look at their transfer window, you're just really surprised, you know? I mean, they were tracking Gabri Veiga. They lost Kim to Bayern. They never replaced him. They got Nathan from Brazil, who's had heart problems and injuries and is not acclimated to Serie A. They have Juan Jesus, who is 33 and is starting for them. So to me, that's this time around, I think Aurelio De Laurentiis really did his best to be himself. Like, so he, you know, the cheapest possible owner in Serie A, despite winning the Scudetto. And I don't know, with Rudy Garcia, anything can happen. You know, he can do wonders. He can go on a lucky streak, or it can absolutely backfire on him. We saw them get humiliated by Lazio. The scoreline could have been much, much worse.
Terrible.
We'll see. With Roma, obviously, I'm speaking, you know, trying to ignore the first three games. So even though Milan did really well, I'm putting them up there because they actually went out of their way and recognized that the problem was the attack was stale. So with the exception of Giroud, they basically changed all of the personnel up front. Decateller, Salesmaker, Messias, all gone. They went out, they got Pulisic, they got all these guys to try and rejuvenate the squad and make a change. So I applaud them. And Atalanta did the same. You know, they tried to instill new life and bring players that are compatible with the Bangsbo potion. And then we'll see what Mary Demiral has to say about Gasperini. Gasperini is getting some bad press, and I'm all there for it. I'm loving every second of it. I want that dictator and cheater exposed as soon as possible. And we'll see. You know, it's three games. We're heading into this international break. It's a weird period of time because no international games have been played yet. So it's this weird bubble where people are waiting for the international break to be over, but no games have been played yet, so we don't even have anything to talk about with regards to the club as to what's happening. I know Dybala is back to training. Renato Sanchez, who knows if he's going to be back for Empoli. And then, you know, we can start projecting our inspired starting 11 after the international break is done, because hopefully, you know, Roma come up with a solution. And in the meantime, we just have to keep our fingers crossed that nobody, and I mean nobody, gets injured.
I think that is the best way to put it. So let's end it there. Again, we both agree Roma up there with among the better of transfer markets in Serie A. I will have to say, I know Napoli did virtually nothing this summer. I do have to applaud them, though, because the fact they were able to hold on to Zielinski, I thought, was actually perhaps their best move of the summer, because I did fear, Andy, that he was going to go to Lazio, and admittedly, he is a player I adore the guy. He can do so much, and the fact that they were able to keep hold of him, I thought, was important, because, again, I did fear he was going to go to Lazio. So let's leave it there. We will return on Monday when we have the end or towards the latter stages of this international break, and we can get up and running for Roma to get back onto the pitch. Let us know what you think. Where do Roma rank in terms of the rest of Serie A in transfer market grade? So we will leave it there until Monday. Have a great weekend. Ciao.
Ciao. We'll be right back.
think about businesses that are selling through the roof, like Aloe or Allbirds or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret? With Shop Pay, that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whatever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/try to upgrade your selling today. Shopify.com/try.
A musician with technical knowledge can play all the right notes, but one who cares enough to play from the heart gives music soul. At Truist, we believe the same is true for banking. Because when you work with someone who knows a lot and cares even more, you're unstoppable. Truist, leaders in banking, unwavering in care. Start feeling unstoppable. Visit truist.com/care. Truist Bank, member FDIC, leading based on top 10 U.S. commercial bank.